Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
I'm ready to blow it just one more sound.
Brain Injury Radio and Radio Ability are sponsored by the TBI Network.
Find them on facebook.com/TBI Network or at tbifn.org.
Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week, and now, for tonight's episode of Brain Injury Radio.
Hello?
Hello? Yes? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Why did you give me a link?
Or is it, I mean, I don't know. So they just listen to the show when you're not talking, I guess. When you said hello, you should have told them who you were. But they probably recognized it from the number which Doran probably gave them. Yes.
Uh-huh.
I'll show you.
Mm-hmm.
What you do is, was it an email or a message link? Well, you can't be on the link and the phone at the same time. Okay, Terry's going to talk first, then we'll have Michelle. So, yes.
Did you do that?
No, because I don't have it.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. I believe I believe I fixed the problem. But I'm going to have a strange echo. But anyway, Carrie, why don't you start out telling us about yourself and your situation?
Okay. My name is Carrie Rowan, and I have chronic pain. I have fibromyalgia. I had juvenile onset fibromyalgia. I started showing symptoms as early as 5 years old. Had my first full-blown attack when I was in second grade. I was 7 years old. And if you know anything about fibromyalgia, you know it. For a lot of people, it takes a long time for them to get diagnosed, get an accurate diagnosis. So fast forward many years later, I finally got a diagnosis, and I was fortunate enough to wind up with a fibromyalgia specialist who had the disease himself, and three of his four children have it, and he has written books about it and has developed a treatment plan that's a little, as some would call, a little unorthodox, very safe. And his knowledge of the disease is just encyclopedic. And he told me that the disease is absolutely genetic. And I also read online on the internet a doctor that said, genes load the gun, events pull the trigger. So I very much believe that is true. And he told me that to have it as severely as I had it and to start experiencing symptoms so young, I had to have two genes for it, which essentially means I have it twice. I also have chronic back pain from scoliosis and neck and back problems from a car accident that I was in. I've made it my business to try to learn as much as I can about these things. And along the way, I think I've learned some things about coping with fibromyalgia, coping with chronic pain, and coping with chronic illness. I've been thinking about this a lot lately, and if I were to be talking to someone who was, say, recently diagnosed and was feeling very bewildered and wanted some guidance or advice, the first thing that comes to mind is get the help and support you need. I know that's easier said than done, but I think it's very important. I don't think I have always done that enough in my life, but you've got to learn to become your own advocate, believe in your own experience, and just find ways to get the help and support that you need.
Was that one of the things the doctor told you, the doctor who was treating you, who has it all in his family?
Right. Over time, because I treated with him for over 20 years, he is now retired, but I don't know if we ever specifically talked about that. I don't recall it. We talked about many things over time, and I learned a great deal from him, but this is something that I guess I sort of figured it out on my own by trial and error and by making mistakes. When I talk about getting the help and support that you need, I'm looking at notes that I wrote in preparation for this program. My next note says, try to determine what is not working in your life and what you need to do to change it. It's not easy, but it's important. And here comes the really hard part. Sometimes it's some of the people in your life. People will say things to you like, oh, you just need to get more exercise. That's your problem. Or if you just start drinking aloe vera juice, or if you take more vitamins, or this, that, or the other thing, you'll find a lot of people are what I call self-appointed experts on your medical condition, even though they're not a doctor. And this can be really hard. It can be friends. It can be family. And a lot of the sentences start with, if you would just, you know, if you would just do this, if you would just do that. I remember years ago when I was a teenager, I think I was maybe a freshman in college, and I was on a date with this boy, and I just started feeling terrible, because fibromyalgia can do that to you. You can just start having terrible pain, and I didn't know what was causing it. And I told him that I wasn't feeling well, and he said, well, maybe if you'd just try harder. You know, there are a million examples of that. So I think for me, what I figured out from that is you try to educate people. You try to reason with them. I had one friend who I said, I have an article that you might like to read about this. Not even a book, because I've got books on the subject too, but just an article. And the person said, no, I'm not going to read it. So, you know, my mind is like a parachute. It works better when it's open. in terms of work, I've gone to a lot of support groups for fibromyalgia, and a lot of the people in the group did not work, could not work because of the illness. But some of the people did work, and I've always worked. I've always worked full time. And so I think if the person is working, they need to, if possible, try to think about, am I in the right line of work? Is there, you know, do I need to make a change? Can I make a change? What can I do here? How about your chair, your work chair, whether it's your home office or your office away from home? Is your chair ergonomically correct for you? Now, that's something that you might be able to change. And in my case, I did change that. I've gone through several chairs in my office until I got the right one. And it does help. It doesn't cure the disease, but all of the things you can do like that make a difference. I have learned that you really have to think about almost everything that you do with this illness. It's got so many facets to it. Another thing that I was thinking of is how to manage flare-ups. And this is something I've really had to learn, because flare-ups are, you can be on your medication, your treatment protocol is working well, you keep all your appointments, you do everything you're supposed to do, and yet you still can have flare-ups. You will have flare-ups. My doctor asked me one time, what do you think your biggest trigger is? And I said, that's easy. Changes in the weather. The weather is the one thing we have no control over. Can do things like be prepared for a flare-up, which means, in my case, it means like having soup or casseroles frozen in the freezer, so I'm not at the grocery store. I'm not cooking when I'm not feeling well. I can just pull something out, thaw it out in the microwave and heat it up, and I have, you know, good food to eat. It means having, I take Tylenol for pain, and it means having Tylenol at home, at work, in my purse, so I'm not standing in line at CVS or Walmart when I'm really hurting. So I think planning can be, you know, can be a good tool to use. Another thing that I do, I think of it as like my toolkit. And one thing that's in my toolkit is my TENS unit, which I'm using right now as we speak. So making sure I always have batteries for my TENS unit, things like that. It's about figuring out what you can and cannot control and working on controlling the things that you can to make your life easier. Going back to getting the support that you need and getting the help that you need, it goes without saying that you need good health care. You need good medical care. So find the right people to help you with that. If you have a doctor that's not taking you seriously, you know, do your best to try to find someone who will. It's easier said than done, but I think nothing in life that's worth anything is easy. that's what I think. Talking a little bit more about your triggers, one thing that I've learned is to keep an eye on the forecast, the weather forecast, because I know that that can affect my illness more than anything else. And so if we're having sunny, warm weather and the forecast is saying it's getting ready to change, there's a storm coming in, this might not be the time to plan to, you know, have a big garage sale or some other big event in your life. This might be the time to you know, say, okay, there's a good chance I'm not going to be feeling well, so I don't really need to be planning any activities that I don't have to do. I might be in for a flare up, and so maybe I'm just going to need to rest for a couple of days, and weather the storm, so to speak. So those are some of the things that that I thought about with all of this. Does anybody have any questions for me? Okay. And one thing that has helped me a lot is finding some good books on the subject. And my doctor has written one of the main books. His main book is What Your Doctor May Not Tell You About Fibromyalgia. And after he wrote the book, he revised it 3 times, so it's now in its 4th edition. And I still look things up in that book all the time. But there are some other books I like a lot, too. There's Dr. Devon Starlinall has written some books about fibromyalgia. She also has fibromyalgia, and she had to stop being a doctor because of her illness. And she writes very candidly about that in her books. But her books are really, I really find them helpful. Again, I've read them years ago, but I still consult them. So those are some of my favorite things for information.
Very interesting, Carrie. I wanted to ask you, does your family directly affect the presentation of your disease? I'm sorry, I'm echoing.
Okay, I want to be sure I understand your question. So are you asking what the family connection is?
Yes.
Well, out of 4 siblings that I have, one has been diagnosed with fibromyalgia, one of my sisters. So far, none of the others have been diagnosed with it. I have one other sister, and I have 2 brothers. It is much more common in women than it is in men. The figure my doctor always quoted was 85% women. He had patients who were men, but the majority of his patients were adult women. My father's sister, my Aunt Betty, she was never diagnosed, but we all know Betty had it. I talked to Betty's daughter. Betty had it. That's just irrefutable. The fact that she was never diagnosed doesn't mean she didn't have it. And my father always talked about Betty had health problems from the time she was very young. When she was in college, she called her father and said, "Daddy, come get me. I just can't do this anymore." And she never got diagnosed, but she was just sickly all her life. And we know that she had fibromyalgia. Her daughter, my cousin also has it. And I think my mother had it, but I think she had like one gene for it, so she didn't have it in the way that I have it. But part of fibromyalgia is IBS or irritable bowel syndrome, and my mother had lots of problems with that. And she had so many workups for that, and they never found anything wrong with her. I think that it was fibromyalgia, and that is how it manifests itself in some people. One thing that a lot of people are not aware of about fibromyalgia, just about any website you go to or anything you look up, it says It talks about widespread pain that's gone on for, I think it's 3 months or 6 months or something like that. Some people actually don't have the pain, or they don't have as much pain. There's a doctor that writes on the internet, and she says for her it was the fatigue. That was her biggest symptom. And the fatigue is a real thing with it, too. But not everybody, what I'm saying is not, the pain is not what predominates in every single patient. It's such a mysterious illness. Not everybody wears it the same way. So those are my family connections. I'm convinced my mom had it. My sister's been diagnosed with it. My aunt had it, and my aunt's daughter, my cousin, has it. My sister, who has it, has two daughters, and she believes that her youngest daughter has it too. But she has not been diagnosed, and I think her daughter is kind of rejecting the idea. She could be in denial. But one thing, talking about my doctor, one thing he did tell me is he said many times when he would get a new patient, the new patient is brought in by the grandmother or the aunt, you know, a family member recognizes that a child or a young adult has, you know, this. They recognize the symptoms. And he said almost 100% of the time they're spot on. You know, if grandma brings the child in and she's his patient, and she says, "I wanted you to examine my granddaughter or my grandson. The parents don't believe me, but I just think that, you know, that the child has fibromyalgia." And he said 99.9% of the time they got it right. The kid will have it. And he always talked about if you could get the child on treatment, you can really nip it in the bud, and you can prevent the child from having a lot of problems that would otherwise be inevitable.
Okay. Am I coming through loud and clear?
Yes.
I'm having a problem. I'm having a lot of problems with this show, and I'm sitting here talking on my cell phone, but thank you very much for your contribution, Carrie.
Well, you're welcome.
Very interesting stuff, and I'm sorry that my questions weren't coming through, but I've had problems with the sound on this show.
Mm.
And if you want to leave now, that's fine. Okay.
I'll stay on a little bit longer, if that's okay.
Okay. Be my guest. And I'm sorry about this double show here. Just a minute. Let me try to delete this. Is not working. Okay. Well, I'm sorry. But anyway, I just wondered, Carrie, have you found that over time, you can deal better with it because of the strategies you've learned?
Oh, absolutely. Definitely.
Uh-huh. Cut and dried like that, right?
I'm sorry?
It's cut and dried then. You can definitely
feel
the difference.
Well, life is a teacher, and you know, as you go through your life, you know the saying, that which doesn't kill you makes you stronger. It's really true. And I think, we deal with things. Sometimes I deal with things better than other times. Okay, so the times that I have to say, I probably could have handled that a little bit better. But then you learn and you move forward.
Yeah.
And you say, I'm not doing that again. One lesson I learned is to not whatever relationship it is, whether it's personal or like a dentist or a doctor or somebody that's not listening to you, don't stay in that relationship. Figure out how to change.
Okay. Okay, very nice. Very nice. So the object of the game here is changing the things that don't work in your life.
That's the crux of it.
And you found that's helped you throughout your life.
I have found that to be critical.
Critical. And you've been diagnosed for many, many years now, so
right.
You've been through a long journey.
it's been a long journey.
Okay, very nice. Well, I was just wondering if you, Michelle, have any comments about what Carrie was saying as it relates to your fibromyalgia.
Well, I would have to say that she's more knowledgeable about what to do than I am. I think because I've never really found I think I found maybe a couple of doctors that were helpful. Actually even recognized it.
Hmm.
So many of them just want to we just don't know anything and don't waste our time.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like that. And
have you found that, Carrie?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And
it's functional. It's all in your head. You just need to get more exercise. I've even been told, well, you probably need to lose weight, and I'm like, but I weigh 104 pounds.
Oh my God! Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
I would have to say that something strange happened, and I didn't know what to make of it or who to talk to about it. But I didn't really have any problems until I was in my mid-30s. And that's when I began to have the pain and the fatigue.
Mm.
And I knew it wasn't right. And, of course, doctors put me on, thought I had lupus, put me on steroids. And, of course, I gained weight. Then after a while, I thought, well, I have to lose the weight. And I got on, now I don't know whether there's, I don't know what kind of truth there is to this, but I know that it happened to me. One year I got on Medifast, weight loss, wasn't eating normal food, drank normal water, lots of water, but had my four Medifast meals, and I lost 70 pounds that year, and I also made myself walk on the treadmill every morning. And through that period of time and a little bit afterwards, I had no symptoms.
Wow.
Then when I started to eat food, even just broccoli and cheese, it didn't take long. Here came the pain.
Huh.
And I don't know why. And then when we moved to California, and there was a rheumatologist in Bakersfield that suggested at night that I take a muscle relaxer, which
mm-hmm.
helps me get sleep, Xanadine. Helps me get sleep and does help with the pain. So that and Oshner's, when we had lived in Louisiana for a while because of my husband was in petroleum, and we unfortunately, it was not a wonderful place for us to be. But Oshner's in New Orleans, a big medical hospital there, suggested that I should be on Paxil and continue with the Xanadine. Well, maybe the Paxil helps a little bit. Not so much with the fatigue, but I do know I get rest at night when I take that medication. Outside of that, I have to say I really don't know what would improve my situation or what would make it better. I just keep trying to do the work that I do because I love it. And
right.
I try to keep pushing ahead, mitzvah on, and try to keep. And I'm not on my feet a lot because I am sitting, teaching. But in any time I have an injury or, well, maybe not a serious injury, but anything happens, muscles get pulled, whatever, of course it's going to get worse.
Yes.
And, or any surgery or whatever. I don't find this being true about the flu or anything like that, but as far as physical injuries, yes, it makes the fibromyalgia worse. But, of course, it's the weather that does the most damage.
Mm-hmm.
And all, yes. And you were so right about the fact of it being genetic. I know my mother must have had this.
Mm-hmm.
And my niece, and now, I don't think my sister was ever diagnosed with it, but my niece was, and she had it very early in her life. So So I know there had, I knew there had to be a genetic component somehow. And, but I frankly have never figured out anything that helps it particularly, or that I have to plan to do or eat, or I don't know. I don't know how to explain it. But you've done a, Carrie, you've done a lot. Basically, I just try to work through the pain. And there is a device or something you had mentioned, Carrie, about a pin unit?
TENS, T-E-N-S, and it's let me try to get this right. Trans electric nerve stimulation or something like that.
I think that's
and,
what it stands for.
Is that, did I get that right? And
yeah,
so I'm using it right now because it's towards the end of the day, and that's when we're tired, you know, especially
oh,
if
yeah.
we've been working and start getting some pain. And so it has, it's a little bit bigger than like a remote control for a television. Mine is AccuMed, A-C-C-U-M-E-D. It says AccuMed Electronic Pulse Massager, and it has four little like pads that you stick. You stick those, like I have four of them on my back right now, and then they have a like a cord or a line or something, and it plugs into the unit, and it's like an electric pulse, and you can adjust it. For how, you know, do you want it weaker or stronger? It has several options on it. And I got it, I'm almost 99% sure I got it off Amazon.com.
I know, my husband just looked it up. That's great.
It's ordered.
That's great. He ordered it just as you were talking.
Oh, great.
Oh, thank you, Carrie.
I highly recommend it, and they're not terribly expensive, and they're portable. If you have to go somewhere and you think you might have pain and you have some cargo pants with big pockets, you can stick that little puppy in there and, you know, wearing a long sweater or a long shirt, you know, you can kind of, and you can use it when you're driving.
Oh,
you know,
very
you can use it when you're driving. Driving can flare me up, and I commute out of county every day. But I recently had to make a trip down to Merced, and I live in Fairfield, so that's a bit of a drive. And it was for a very worthy cause. It had to see a friend of mine, and it has to do with the charity that I work with, but. I drove back in one day. You know, I drove down in the morning and drove back that afternoon. So that's a heck of a lot of driving. But I survived it with my Tylenol and by stopping the car and getting, you know, just walk around the car a little bit, just, you know, do a few lunges and also with my TENS. And I was, you know, I was sore afterwards, but I did it. And
right.
I think sometimes, too, I think that's, you know, it's like, see, I can, you know, my little voice, see, I can do things.
Yeah, that's great. And I have, that's wonderful. I didn't know there was anything like that. I had, my knees are in pretty bad shape because, I have to say it's a small stroke because it was about 3 years ago or so. Well, I'm 77, and my pulse was too slow. because of low pressure. And so it's caused the right side to not be as strong. And my balance, I have to be really careful with my balance. And my knees are beginning to say, hey, do you know how old you are? And let me remind you. And and if
I can relate.
You have any other pain, it's going to be worse with the fibromyalgia.
Oh,
and but I have to tell you, I can't figure out why I was doing so well for all those months in, well, really it was about a 2-year period when I was on the Medifast and I was doing the walking every day. The exercise helped.
Yeah.
But also maybe the Medifast, maybe it was food I was eating. I don't know.
Well, I can tell you, my doctor that specialized in it, he started out as an endocrinologist. And he then, when he got diagnosed, he started having so many patients and his children and everything. Eventually, that's all he did is fibromyalgia. So if you were his patient, it meant you had fibromyalgia. But he had trained and practiced for many years as an endocrinologist, and he found a connection between hypoglycemia, which I had already been diagnosed with that in my early 30s, and hypoglycemia and fibromyalgia. In other words, I don't have an exact figure, but the percentage, let's say the percentage of just random sample of people that would have, if you took 1,000 people, how many of them have hypoglycemia? If you took 1,000 people with fibromyalgia, it's going to be a lot higher. And not sure exactly what the connection is, but there's something there. So he told me, I'm not going to put you on the HG diet because you're already on it, because I was. But he said, if you weren't, I'd put you on that diet. And so that, I think the HG diet has helped a lot. And when he did retire and I went to a new specialist that he had trained, she asked me that on my first appointment, are you on the HG diet? And I said, yes, ma'am, I am. So I think diet is a factor. I never eat sweets. I try to stay away from, refined carbohydrates, plenty of protein and, in fresh vegetables, things like that. It's a fairly strict diet. And then I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just listening. It's the HB or HG?
HG for hypoglycemia.
Yeah, I don't have that. But, my husband whispered, you have the opposite. Yeah, I crave sugar.
that is actually a symptom of hypoglycemia.
Yeah.
Oh.
Because before I got diagnosed with it, I was at a point in my life where I just had no energy. And so I would go to work and drag through the day. And on my way home from work, I would go and do you know what a big gulp is?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It's like about 5 gallons of soda pop. It's this huge vat of soda pop. I would drive through and get one of those at a place, and I would go home. I would drag myself up to my apartment, flop down in the chair, and just guzzle the big gulp, and then I would have some energy to do a little bit of things. And finally, I crashed and I got taken to the hospital in an ambulance. It was very dramatic.
Oh,
I did get diagnosed with, and I immediately went on the diet that they told me to go on. But the doctor that diagnosed it got the diet a little bit wrong because he wasn't a specialist for it. So, but mostly he got it right, and it did help. I did start to feel better. But when I went to the fibromyalgia doctor, who, remember, he was also an endocrinologist, he's the one that said that some of the things the other guy told me, you know, no, you shouldn't be having that. So I did immediately what he said. The other thing he's always stressed is exercise. Now, this man, the last time I saw him was in early March of 2020, and he was getting ready to retire at the end of the month. He was 93 years old.
Oh, my.
And he told me, he said, you know, I walk 7 miles every day. And I knew he walked a lot. I knew he exercised a lot, but I didn't know he walked that much. And so he was talking about that. He's always exercised, and he's a big proponent of it. But when I first went to him, he said he was talking about, you know, experiences other patients have had with other doctors. And he said, you know, these doctors that take these, they put people on these drugs that make them gain weight, and they're in so much pain, and then they tell them, if you just get more exercise, and then they over-exercise and they hurt themselves. So he says, I'm a big believer in exercise, but you must start slow and work up.
Right.
And that's what I did.
So, and who is your doctor now?
Well, when Dr. St. Amand retired, I got Dr. Congdon. She was out in Mill Valley, and I saw her a few times. Really liked her, too. She's great. But Dr. Congdon got sick, and her doctor took her off work. So she's been off work for more than a year. And she told me the last time I saw her that when she did return to work, she didn't know if it was going to be in the Bay Area. So I checked her website recently, and it said that she was going to start seeing patients again. There's a waiting list, and I'm on it. But the website said she was going to see patients remotely. I'm not sure how that's going to work, because usually they have to examine you. But if anybody could do it, she could, I think. And it said that she was going to give priority to new patients over the ones that were already established. And initially I thought, well, that seems backwards. But then I thought, well, maybe she feels like the ones who have never been seen and haven't started on this treatment program, you know, maybe she feels like, let's get them started on it. The others are already on the treatment, and so it's more of a follow-up. So maybe that's her logic.
Well, what is her name again?
Melissa Congdon, Congdon.
Yeah, you guys both live in Fairfield.
But Michelle, I think if you're interested in this, you might want to think about getting Dr. St. Amand's book.
My husband just ordered it.
That's your doctor made. Oh,
that and the
10 unit.
Because I'll tell you, my sister, she got the book, and she said, and she is not doing this treatment, by the way. I wish she would, but she's not doing it. But she said the book answered so many questions she had about fibromyalgia, she was really glad that she read it. She said so many things that never made sense to me when I read that book. I was like, you know, okay.
Interesting.
If you thought the treatment would work for you, it's a little bit hard to do because there are a lot of things that you can't use with it. And when I first went to him, he said, you're going to have to go through the house and with trash bags and throw everything away, like your soaps, your shampoo, your deodorant, your toothpaste. You're going to have to get just the ones that, you know, are approved. The book explains all of that.
Oh, the book does. Okay.
Yeah. And there's also an online, it's kind of like a listserv or a support group that you can ask questions like, would this be okay? But I've learned to, you know, if I'm not sure something's safe, my motto is when in doubt, don't. So
yeah.
if I go to the store and I see a shampoo and I'm not sure about one of the products, I put it back on the shelf because there's always an alternative.
Uh-huh. Do you notice that even a shampoo change makes a difference?
Well, what the thing about the soap and the toothpaste and the shampoo, anything you put on your skin, if it has certain ingredients in it, it will block the effect of the medication. It will render it ineffective, and so it'll be like you're not being treated.
Oh.
The other thing to know about this treatment is a lot of doctors sneer at it because it's not what you call evidence-based medicine. In other words, there isn't a university study, you know, like
right.
No drug company has gone to a university and they've had, you know, people in a trial and proved that it's going to work. And that's never going to happen because the drug is over the counter. So they're not going to spend money on doing a study on an over the counter drug.
Well, now when you say the drug, what is the drug?
The drug is guaifenesin. You know it?
Yeah, it's in cough medicine.
And he explains in the book his theory about why it works. And my experience is it's the reason, and to me it has, this program has saved my life. Because I was in my 40s when I got diagnosed. My primary doctor tried, you know, he was a very good doctor. He was wonderful. He diagnosed it. And so we tried all the different things, you know, and a lot of them are, you said you're on Paxil, a lot of them are antidepressants and sleep medications. And I had terrible reactions to them. They didn't work. So then I heard about Dr. St. Amand, and I got his book and I started reading it and I made an appointment. And I went to see him, and he, you know, they explained about how the treatment works. I told him I had had his book and I had been reading it, and but it's important to avoid things that are like plant-like things. Like, in other words, say you had a skin lotion that has olive oil in it, then that you wouldn't be able to use that. Or if you had a hair conditioner that had avocado oil, that would be out. It has to be chemical things. You'd think it'd be the opposite, but chemicals are safe. Natural things are not.
This is what I find very interesting, because on Medifast, it was chemicals that I was eating, you know.
But you felt better. You felt better.
Interesting.
And then I noticed, the other thing that you have to be aware of is that it will exacerbate your symptoms at first. And I hadn't been on it very long when that happened, and it was for real, and I felt pretty sick, but it only was that bad the one time, and then you, it's kind of like you cycle on the drug, and it's what he calls clearing.
Uh-huh.
He calls it, the term he uses, clearing, because he says you have these buildups in your body. He says what causes fibromyalgia is genetic, but there's a defect in the body where you don't excrete phosphates normally. A normal person excretes phosphates, but people with fibromyalgia, they don't. So they build up in the body, and that's what makes the person sick.
Uh-huh.
And the point of the guaifenesin is to find those spots and dissolve the phosphates so that you can get rid of them.
Hmm.
And it's a very interesting thing.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't even know what phosphates are. So
they're in a lot of things.
This is a chemical that we put in our bodies a lot.
It's in foods, a lot of foods.
Yeah.
Right.
And other things, too, you were just talking about, Carrie.
Yeah. Well, that's very interesting.
It really is interesting, I think.
Now, I will also have to say that I get a great deal of relief from my chiropractor.
Me too.
And
chiropractor, thank you.
And that wasn't always true. I could go to other chiropractors and, you know, I'd wonder why did I do that?
Well, I first went to a chiropractor when I was in high school, and I was in so much pain with my back that I couldn't sleep at night. And so we lived in small town. We lived in Rio Vista, and there was a local chiropractor. He was a good doctor. He was very good. And so I went to him, and the first time he ever adjusted me, that night I slept. And he called me the next day, and he said, "I just called to see how you're doing, Carrie." And I said, "I slept last night." He goes, "Did you sleep like a baby?" I said, "Yeah." So I doctored with him for a while. And then, you know, various times in my life. But when I lived in Southern California for many years, I had one who he said that I had an attitude problem. Me? And so I quit going to him because the treatment wasn't working. It wasn't, and he said, "Well, you must have an attitude problem." So I wound up going to another chiropractor that a doctor, not my doctor, but another doctor in the office that I saw on like an urgent call for something else. And he asked me, "Was there anything else going on with you?" I said, "Yeah, my back keeps hurting." And he said, "Well, to a chiropractor that a lot of our patients are using and they rave about this guy." And his name was Dr. Schaefer. He looked like a kid. He was so young. But he was really nice. He was really great. And so I told him what the other doctor had said, and he said, "You did the right thing to leave." He said, "I consider that abuse."
Yes, yes. Yeah. And I've had that.
To tell a patient that you have an attitude problem and that's why the treatment isn't working, he said, "That's abuse."
Right.
That's patient abuse.
Yeah, it really is. No, I probably, and she may agree with me, need to see my chiropractor more often.
Yeah, Carrie's in weekly.
Every week. And because helps me.
It what?
It helps me.
Oh, yes.
It made a difference.
It helped me almost immediately.
Help me immediately. Sometimes it takes till the next day for me to feel it. And my assistant at work, Kathy, she said the same thing, that when she sees her chiropractor, it takes a day or a day and a half for it to, like, take effect.
Hmm.
Some people say, "That's fine." It's so incredible, Michelle, that you feel it while you're on the table.
I can actually sometimes I'll feel a muscle move, or but I will have to tell you this, after I get through with the treatment, I feel like I've had two or three beers. I really
relaxed.
Oh yes, I just really have to watch my balance, and because I'm feeling so good, it's kind of a high. Say that again.
Your husband always comes in with you to drive you home.
Yes, that's right. Because she's my chiropractor.
Well. So you don't want to get a DUA driving while adjusted.
Oh, well, that's perfect. Yes, that's right. That's right. Yeah. But, you know, there's got to be more help for us. And I think part of it is because one of the things that you said, Carrie, about 85% of the people who have this are women. I think, you know.
Yep. Oh yes.
You know, women's problems are not
not taken seriously.
Right. Exactly.
And that's what Dr. Saint Amand, that's something he told me. If he said that once, he's told me a whole lot of times. This is not getting taken seriously by what? You know, by the medical community, by politicians, by because it's women. That's what he said.
Right.
He always said that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
There's a book called Screaming to Be Heard, and it's about how doctors don't worry about problems women have.
And I hate to say this, and I hate myself for saying this, but it's just as bad with women doctors.
Yeah,
in
nope,
fact,
you're
some,
right.
Sometimes it's worse.
And they're probably trained by men.
Well, and they train in the same-sexist institutions.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. You're right.
Yeah, that's true.
And I have gotten... for, you know, medical doctors, for MDs, more help. If I divided them into men and women, I've gotten much more help from male physicians. That doesn't mean I've loved every male physician I've been to, but the doctor I have now is a woman, and I like her very much, and she knows a lot about fibromyalgia. She said something one day that I was surprised she knew that, because she doesn't specialize in it, but she's sharp. She's good. But I think she's the exception.
Right.
And not the rule.
Is this the Dr. Condon that you were talking about previously?
No, I was thinking of my primary doctor, Dr. Yoshisada. But Dr. Condon is also, in my opinion, a wonderful doctor. And she has it, too. Now, her story is interesting. Her mother had it. Her mother, long story short, her mother had been referred to Dr. Saint Amand. Her mother lives in Southern California, and she had been referred to Dr. Saint Amand. And so she was at her mother's house, and she saw paper on the table, and she said, you know, Mom, what's this? And she said, oh, that's Dr. Saint Amand. He's a fibromyalgia specialist, and I've got an appointment to see him, and I wanted to ask, would you go with me to the appointment? So she said, of course. And so she said, went to the appointment, met Dr. Saint Amand, and he examined my mother, and he said she did indeed have it, and that they were going to get her on treatment and, you know, get her better. And she said, then he looked at me and he said, well, you're here and you're a first line relative. Would you mind if I examined you too? And so she and her mom trade places. She gets up on the table. She said, he got finished examining me, and he said, you have it too. And she says she didn't even know anything about it. She didn't remember ever studying it in medical school.
I believe that.
He got her on treatment. So she was his patient. She was his colleague. He was her mentor because he taught her the treatment protocol. And they're friends too. So I'm sure she was a quick study. She's very smart.
Wow. Well, it looks like the treatment which is primarily in the book.
It explains all about it. Yes.
Yeah. It's very helpful.
There are a lot of people who are using it. You can tell this if you go on the, I guess it's like an online support group, but it's not for fibromyalgia. It's for people who are trying to do this protocol. So it's got a narrow focus. It's not a general fibromyalgia support group. And the people who run it, the main one was Dr. St. Amand's medical assistant. She was like his office nurse, Claudia Marek. And Claudia has written a book on fibromyalgia, too.
Okay. Is this a how would I get in touch with this group?
Well, they're on Facebook. They moved it over to Facebook. So how would you do that? Let's see.
What is the group called?
What's the name of the group? Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to. Let me see if I can go online and let me boot up my laptop and see if I can find that for you.
Okay.
Because I guess I've been on it so long, I just, you know, when I go on Facebook, stuff just pops up. But let's try it.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting because out of all the patients of fibromyalgia that I've had in my practice, you're the only one who gets major fevers with yours. The break on the table as I'm adjusting you.
Yes, that's true. I'll get a low grade fever and it'll go away when you're adjusting me. That's true.
Yeah, I've never seen anybody else with that kind of presentation.
Yeah.
There might be a reason for that.
Yeah.
Dr. St. Amand says fibromyalgia is a metabolic disease. So think about that for a minute. Body temperature, metabolism.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that, of course, affects everything that we do.
Right.
Well, one thing that happens to me is my body temperature is too cold when I'm in pain. And I also, you know, I also go to acupuncture, and the acupuncturist said the reason for that is when you're in that much pain, your body has trouble maintaining its body temperature.
Oh, that makes sense.
Okay, here we go. Fibromyalgia Treatment Center, online support group. This print is
okay.
So small.
Fibromyalgia treatment. Okay.
And then here's the web address: http://. www.
Okay. HTTP.
www.fibromyalgia treatment.
So www.fibromyalgiatreatment.com.
Got it.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
I'm just going to click on this and see. Yep, this should take you to how to do the online support group. Yeah, his office was called the Fibromyalgia Treatment Center, and I think they've still got their, maybe still got the website, but. Okay, let me look at this. I think if you read this, you can figure out how to do it, how to get on to the online.
Right.
Looking at this. I'm already on it, so it's just kind of, you know, they just pop up for me. And I don't usually have any questions about the protocol.
Because you've been doing it for so long.
Because I've been on it so long.
Got it.
Yeah, you got it. You got it.
Okay, good. Okay.
He's writing things down on his phone. Thank you.
But what a good helper.
Yes. Yes, he is. And all this is so helpful for me because I had just kept going along with what I, you know, had before. Oh, yes, the guaifenesin and yes. Yeah.
I can tell you where I get my guaifenesin too.
Where do you get that?
There's a pharmacy. There was a pharmacy on the same in the same complex that where Dr. St. Amon had his office, which was in Southern California, Marina del Rey, and he was proactive. He went and like made friends with the pharmacist there and talked to him about this. And they started specializing in helping people with fibromyalgia. They compounded their own guaifenesin, so it's pure. It doesn't have any dye in it. And the pharmacist developed a lot of expertise and the people that work there. So long story short, the fibropharmacy is now online. And sometimes I get my guaifenesin from them, so I either call or email or something. And the lady's name is Stacy, and so I'm a long-time customer. And they can mail it to me. And the other way I get it is on Amazon sometimes, but it has to be the long-acting. Can't be the fast-acting, and the long-acting is 600 milligrams or 300 milligrams. If it's 400 milligrams, that's fast acting and it won't work. It also, if you go to a pharmacy, they'll say, oh, Mucinex is over there. Well, Mucinex won't work because it's got dye in it.
I was going to ask that question. Well, what did you say about the site with fibro?
I think it's still called the Fibro Pharmacy. Let me see if I can Google that too. Fibro Pharmacy. Yep, Fibro Pharmacy 310-823-5311.
53111. Yeah,
Stacy.
And yeah, my niece's area code is 3102.
Where does she live?
Rancho Palos Verdes.
Oh yeah, Marina Del Rey, Rancho Palos Verdes. That's all L.A. County.
Right. Okay. Interesting.
And Stacy, I don't know if I've talked to her about this in a long time, but sometimes if I have a question before. When Jim, the pharmacist, was still there, I was trying to find an antacid because I have a hiatal hernia. And I was trying to find an antacid that didn't have mint in it because mint is another thing you can't have. So I called Jim, the pharmacist, and Jim was great. He said, this is what he told me. He goes, Carrie, grab your cell phone, drive down to CVS, and when you get in CVS, call me. So I did. So he goes, okay, start pulling antacids off the shelf and read me what's in them, and I'll tell you if it's okay or not. And we found one.
Wow. That didn't happen.
Yeah, he was, and Dr. Congdon said she's still, she says, oh, I still email with Jim. Yeah, Jim's he's great. And that's another thing I think about dealing with any kind of chronic illness. People forget your doctor's important, but you need good pharmacists too.
Yes. Oh, that's so true.
I have other medical problems, and I have OptumRx through my insurance company. You know, they'll mail order you your prescriptions. Their pharmacists are great.
Oh.
And I call them sometimes with questions that aren't even about my prescriptions, but about other stuff. I recently had some questions about Tylenol. Call up, they always put me through to a pharmacist, and that they're take the time and, you know, talk to you, and they'll look stuff up, and I really am very pleased with them.
And
so that's a resource. That's a resource that, you know, that's that toolbox thing. You need your resources in there.
What was it again?
Our OptumRx.
We know that.
They mail you your. It's like a mail order pharmaceutical service.
Okay, that would be yes. We ought to look into that because I couldn't, I needed to see about a prescription refill today at CVS, and I never could talk to a pharmacist.
Well, CVS used to be great. Years ago, I used to get a lot of help from them, and for many years I was medical POA for my mother, who was in a care facility, and when I had questions about drugs, I'd go down there, and they would print stuff out for me and talk to me, but it changed. And the last few times I've dealt with them, I have not been impressed. But OptumRx, so far I'm really happy with their pharmacists. They're just really helpful. So that's it's a resource to keep in mind.
Oh, I see. My husband just found something. Let's see. What is it?
Wofenosin for fibromyalgia because it does not have sugar-free, dye-free, and free of botanical extracts.
That's right. And it needs to be all white.
Well, this has no dye, so I'm sure it's all white.
Okay.
And it's
yes, but I don't know now. What was the milligram?
Specifically for, they say it's also specifically for the fibromyalgia treatment program.
What's the company that makes it?
It's called GUAI-AID.
I think that's one of the ones that they don't recommend.
Ah.
Hold on just a minute. Let me see. Let me see if I can find the one that I got online. I've actually have bought it at Walmart.
Okay.
Hmm.
And sometimes I think it's their Walmart's own brand. Is it Equate?
Yes.
And sometimes they have 1,200 milligrams, and I just cut it in half to get my 600. And they come in blister packs.
Okay.
But I know I've gotten it on Amazon. Let me see if I can find that for you.
It's a dye-free, sugar-free, salicylate-free, kosher capsules.
That there was something I've never used it. Excuse me, but I think I saw something on the online support group that they were saying not to use. I think Guaiade was the one they were saying don't use.
Okay.
So let me just check one thing here real quick. I don't remember what the problem was because I wasn't buying it anyway. Okay, here we go. Guardian. And it's Guardian Mucus Relief, 600 milligrams guaifenesin, 12-hour extended release. And it's on Amazon.com.
Is that the good one?
Yes.
Okay.
In fact, that's the one Dr. St. Amand recommended the last time I saw him.
Extended relief?
I'm sorry?
You said extended relief?
It's 12-hour extended relief.
Ah, okay.
And it looks like you can get a bottle of 100 or a bottle of 500.
Okay.
But Michelle, before you start taking it, I really, really urge you to read the book.
Okay.
Okay.
I found it.
You'll get a lot of information.
Yes. Well, I I have such bad sinus allergies that the guaifenesin will be great anyway.
Yeah, it'll help that.
From that standpoint, yes.
And the only side effect I've ever noticed, and I don't hear other people talking about side effects, you know, from the guaifenesin, the side effect I've had from the guaifenesin is a runny nose, and I've got allergies too, so I could have that anyway.
That's it probably just
how it works.
Cleaning out your sinuses. Yeah.
So so I have a runny nose. I'll carry more Kleenex. I'll live.
Yeah.
And you want to be sure you stay hydrated.
Okay. Yeah.
Drink your water.
Yeah, you're trying to just do more of that, Michelle.
Yes, I know.
It doesn't interfere with any other drugs. And he says it's an old drug. It's been around a long time. And I have a bias in favor of the older drugs because we know more about them.
Yeah, I think so. We've seen what they can do and not do over such a long period of time.
Well, you're not going to get any surprises.
Yeah, which is what you really want.
Because I've had a lot of prescription drugs in my lifetime that have been taken off the market. And I'm like, well, that doesn't make me feel very secure.
Right. As a good example, the low pressure that I was on had my heart rate too slow.
Dangerous.
Yeah. So now, of course, it was evidently needed a long time ago, but not, they cut it in half.
So they had you on the wrong dose?
Well, yeah, I think so, from because my diastolic would get low, and but more than that, my pulse would go very slow. And that was the only thing that they changed after the stroke. That was the only medication they changed, was they cut the low pressure in half. And we've kind of been having to balance things there a little bit too, because by cutting that in half, of course, it raised the blood pressure some, so there, and I'm having to take it every day, along with a whole bunch of other stuff.
Well, I hope this is not an inappropriate question to ask, but have they ever tried you on a different blood pressure medication?
Unfortunately, I'm on as much, I'm lodipine and lisinopril as I can be.
Oh, okay.
Blood pressure.
Because I take lisinopril.
I started having high blood pressure in my early 30s. And I think I have small blood vessels. Whenever they take my blood, they have to do it with a
butterfly
needle.
Like a pediatric needle or something like that.
Right.
Well, I was diagnosed with high blood pressure when I was 19.
Oh my gosh!
Well, Carol, you had it early.
Well,
yeah.
my mother used to say, my mother always said that was genetic, and specifically she blamed it on her mother-in-law. You get that from Grandma Alice.
Well,
but she's probably at least was probably at least half right, because I think it's you know, it's genetic. It's like,
sure.
I think diabetes,
sure.
You know, there, and my doctor that I have now says that about diabetes. She says, I'm not one of these doctors that thinks that people just go out and do all the wrong things and get diabetes. If you don't have that gene,
yeah,
you know, it's other bad things might happen to you, but not that.
Well, my mother passed away at 64 with arterial sclerosis, and I think she probably had diabetes, and they just really weren't checking for it then.
No, probably not.
And now mine's pretty well controlled. But with insulin.
So you're type 1.
I'm type 2.
But you're on insulin.
Yeah.
My brother Ted is an insulin-dependent diabetic. And all the Rowans get diabetes. That it runs rampant in our family. My dad had it. But my dad didn't. His doctor told him a long time ago his chances of getting diabetes were 99 out of 100. But it didn't really show up in him until he was much older. But his brother died in his early 50s. And,
ooh,
it, you know, wasn't technically diabetes, but the complication of the diabetes is what happened. And my grandma, my dad's mother, Grandma Alice, when she died, the doctor said, he told my parents, he says, well, she wouldn't have had any trouble recovering from the heart attack if it weren't for the diabetes. And then he said, well, wait a minute, I'm going to modify that. He said she wouldn't have even had the heart attack in the first place. It's the diabetes was the problem.
Yeah. Was it not controlled with what she was on?
Well, she did work hard to control it. My uncle did not, the one that died in his early 50s, but Grandma Ellis did. She did try to control it, but I don't think they knew as much about it back then. You know, there are more drugs to work with now. And she wasn't old, but she wasn't young. She was, I think she was like maybe about 80 or so.
Right.
My dad's other sibling, Betty had diabetes. She developed it later in life, but, I'm not sure if that, I mean, I'm sure that contributed to her death, but she was in her 80s.
Right. Yeah, I didn't have, well, I guess I started having some small problems in my late 60s. And, but I've never had really frightening numbers. But
well, that's good.
Yeah, and we both of us have diabetes too, and we eat differently than the rest of our family who lives with us. Like I had I don't know exactly the size, but it was fairly small salmon, and half of a sweet potato and some mixed vegetables for supper. And
that
we try to
sounds healthy.
We try to have either chicken or fish for the meat once in a while. We'll have, you know, something that has the hamburger meat, but most of the time it's chicken or fish.
It sounds healthy.
Yeah. as much as we can.
do you feel that eating like that, just generally you feel better on that with that diet?
I may.
It couldn't hurt.
Yeah, it couldn't hurt. And I have a little bit of stevia in my coffee in the morning, but that's it until...
That should be acceptable, I would think.
Yeah, but I don't... I was having it also in the water that I was, supposed to be drinking all day. And it had a little pack of, it tasted like cherries and it had stevia in it. But Doran suggested that I not have that any more than just maybe a little in the coffee in the morning. And so that's what I'm doing.
Well, you sound like you're very disciplined.
Well, I'm trying to do what my doctor says.
It does sound disciplined to me, though, really.
Yeah, well, we're trying to because both of us are working full time, so you know we're trying to, because we both are lucky enough to love our jobs.
That's not nothing. That's important. I love my job too, and I, you know, I'm 72 years old and I'm still working, and I was just thinking today maybe I might think about retiring at the end of next year, but maybe we'll see.
Yeah. And if you love what you do, you wonder, well, then what would I be doing?
Yeah, that's what I think. What would I do? I mean, I don't have, you know, I don't have children. I'm not married. I don't even have a dog.
Oh.
But if I retire, I'll probably get a dog.
Yeah. Well, they're
the commute is not fun. There's just so much traffic.
Oh, goodness. Yeah.
But, it is what it is.
Yeah. And that's stressful. And, gosh, it's so hard to be able to measure stress. Because... But you can see the results, I guess. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, you can stroke, heart problems, you know. The whole thing.
Well,
the
stress will make anything worse, I think.
Yeah. I think that's true.
Yeah, it's like patients are always amazed when they come into the to our chiropractic office and we ask them about stressful situations, because stress can have just as much effect as the medicines we take.
Oh, yes. I agree with that.
Or the people in our lives or whatever. I mean, people don't realize how much effect stress can have on just about everything.
Yeah.
Well... And some people are just extremely stressful to be around. And we were talking earlier about, you know, looking at your life and figuring out what's not working. And sometimes it's people. It's people, and you have to make a decision. Like, you know, what if it's a family member? Well, maybe you have to think about how to at least minimize the relationship.
Yeah, we have some real work to do there, because a lot of our family lives with us. Yes.
Well,
and you have a huge family.
Yes.
I don't think I could live with my family.
Well, what is it they always say? You can choose your friends, but not your family.
Yeah. Well, and sometimes you have friends, and then, you know, you think later on, you know, that, what so-and-so said to me, that didn't feel so good. And you get to a point where you start to evaluate the relationship, and you think, you know what, let me be honest with myself here. This isn't working.
Yeah.
And sometimes you have a difficult decision to make, especially if you've known that person a long time and you care about the person, but like maybe it's not being reciprocated, or maybe the person superficially is, you know, is acting friendly towards you, or, you know, acting nice towards you, but then there's another layer there.
Right.
And I think that's one of the hardest things about, well, fibromyalgia and life in general, is when you have to make a decision that you're going to have, you know, this, I've got to cut things out of my life that aren't working, and that includes this person or these people.
Yeah.
That's hard.
Yeah.
Very hard.
That's true. You have to put up barriers sometimes.
Right, and set boundaries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think, too, when you're like supposing you're going to be around, like I was thinking today about a work meeting I have to go to on Saturday, and there are a few people there that I really don't like, and I really don't respect them.
Wow.
And so I'm thinking, you know, I should have some phrases just in my head in case so-and-so says such and, you know, says this to me, or, you know, I'm anticipating they might say something to me that would be offensive. And so is for what is the saying? Forewarned is forearmed or something like that.
Yeah. Forearmed is forearmed. Yeah.
So instead of just hoping that it doesn't happen, to me it's better to have in my mind, well, if this person says this, I could, you know, I could respond by saying, you know, this is how I could respond. You know, it's better to like have a response prepared in my head, and
right.
then to just let myself be victimized.
Yeah.
And it's better to have it and not need it than need it and not have it.
Right.
Yeah.
That's true.
That's very true. So much for being here, both of you.
Oh, my pleasure.
Really appreciate that. And
yes, thank you, Carrie.
Oh, my pleasure, and I hope that you know that this you know, I'm excited that you're interested in trying this, and I hope it works out for you as well as it has for me.
Yeah, well, that's great. And
I'll just say one more thing. When Dr. St. Amand retired, one of his patients sent around a message that she wanted to make a book for him for a retirement present. And she was asking people to write, like, you know, like a page or like a letter or an essay or something. And she was going to put these together into a book for him. And I thought, that's about the nicest present I think, you know, that he could have, you know, this book of messages from his patients. And so I wrote one, and I said, thank you. I said a number of things, but I said, thank you for giving me back my life.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Because that was how I felt. With his help, I got my life back.
Yeah, that's a pretty big thing.
Well, when I was diagnosed, the doctor that diagnosed me had said that I was probably going to have to stop working and go on disability. And I was in my 40s. I was too young to retire. And I was like, I can't, you know, who can live on disability in the United States, especially in California? Where am I supposed to live in my car? And that just wasn't an option for me, and it wasn't what I wanted. And when I went to see Dr. St. Amand, he didn't say, oh, well, you know, bring me the papers for disability, I'll sign. He said, no, we're going to make you better. We're going to get you where you're not sick all the time.
Yeah. And he could do it.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
Good stuff.
Right.
Well, thank you for hosting this.
Yes,
Doran,
thank you, Doran.
This has been great.
Yeah, you guys both come in here, and I had no idea I should set it up so you guys come in at the same time sometime.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, well, I've learned a lot, and I sure appreciate it.
Okay, let me just quick ask anyone in the listening audience. Does anyone have anything they'd like? You can sign on at 424-243-9└. 424-444-9540. Again, the number for Brain Injury Radio is 424-243-9540. If anyone listening has any questions now while we're broadcasting, please come on in and ask them. I don't see anybody, so maybe we should just say good night. Do you guys, either of you, have anything else you'd like to add?
No, this has been great for me.
Well, I'm glad. I guess I'm talked out.
It's past your bedtime too, Carrie. So. Yeah.
Well, you know, I forgot that I didn't have to go into work today, so I think I didn't have to go. When I work all day long and then I drive home in the horrible traffic, that's part of the reason one of the reasons I conk out so early, and I didn't have to get up real early this morning either. So.
Oh.
So I forgot about that when we talked about this. Okay.
Well, I sure thank you for all the helpful information.
Well, my pleasure and best of luck with that. I think this is going to be a good thing for you.
Can't wait to get the book.
Okay, good.
And the cool citizen.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome, and I'll see you Sunday.
See you Sunday. Okay. Goodbye, Carrie. Goodbye,
bye-bye.
Michelle.
Bye-bye.
Bye.